Welcome to the Texas Tribune Tribcast. This is Deborah Medina. You know, at first, they tried to shut me out of this podcast, but they quickly realized we Texans wouldn't stand for that, and so now, here's the crew.
Thank you. This is reporter Reeve Hamilton here with managing editor Ross Ramsey.
Howdy.
Reporter Julian Aguilar.
Hello.
And reporter Emily Ramshaw.
Hello there.
Thank you all for being here, and thank you to Ms. Medina for recording our intro. Of course, we didn't realize when we had to record it that, when we scheduled her recording, that it would be so perfectly timed. She was up here for the debate, not really the debate, she was here for the sort of protest outside the debate about the TSA anti-groping legislation, which played a significant role in the end of the special session, which has now ended.
We should probably start by thanking the House for not being here and thanking the Senate for not being here now that they've signed died. Yeah, the TSA bill blew up the end of the session. Something always blows it up. But they, you know, they got to the – Perry introduced the bill late to the agenda. He apparently got jumped. Do you remember this guy's name? By the guy on the YouTube? Some guy caught him in New Orleans when he was signing books and said, hey, why haven't you done the TSA bill? And Perry said, we don't have the support. And he said, oh, I think you do.
Right. I've seen the letter and there are all these signatures. You do have the support. And so then I think Perry had to quickly say, okay, let's add this puppy to the call.
So he did it with, you know, about a week left. So things were tight. And the House, the original plan was for the House to pass this out Friday and give the Senate time so that they didn't get into filibuster zone and all of that kind of stuff. And on Friday, they had a dual problem. They didn't have a quorum. They didn't have enough people in the room, which means, frankly, that the Republicans didn't show up for their own bill. And they also were having a disagreement over what should be in the bill. And David Simpson didn't want to change it, and some of the people in management did want to change it. So they left it until the next week. On Monday, they voted tentatively to approve it and left it for Tuesday. And the Senate at that point just went, we don't have time. Somebody's going to filibuster this thing, probably John Whitmire, who had talked about it. And so the Senate signed died early. The House came in, had to have extraordinary measures to pass it, needed 120 votes. I think they got 96.
That's well, right.
The House was in a position where they had to basically accept the Senate version.
Yeah.
Right. Well, one important element of this that we aren't talking about yet is what Strauss said. I think it was on Friday when Strauss basically called it a publicity stunt. If Evan were here, he would say, House Speaker Joe Strauss.
No, that's Ross who says that.
Oh, sorry.
And Ross is here. He's at your left.
House Speaker Joe Strauss, Republican of San Antonio.
Right. You know, basically called it a publicity stunt. So I want to know what was going on behind the scenes, you know, since the time that Strauss called it a publicity stunt to now.
Well, you know, the thing I referred to where there were disagreements between Simpson and the management over what should be in the bill, they came out of that meeting. Simpson said he wouldn't change it, and that's when Strauss made those comments and said, you know, this is a ill-advised publicity stunt, and we ought to just pass a resolution to Congress saying we really hate this thing and
he said it was targeting the wrong people. He said it was targeting the TSA agents who were doing their jobs and not their bosses who were telling them to do their jobs.
Right.
But this was the first time that I'd heard Strauss really come out hard on a particular piece of legislation, and that to me meant not only do I think, you know, we need to change this bill, but also, I mean, I thought that was a pretty clear sign that he just thought this bill was a piece of trash.
Well, the bill passed out of the House during the regular session, didn't it?
Right.
Without any sort of statement like this. Well, is it any different in a special session, though? Because in a special session, you're calling it up especially, saying, you know, this might not have made it before, but this is a problem that really needs addressing, which does make it seem like a different sort of bill, even though the Speaker has been questioned why he didn't raise any hackles about it the first time around.
Well, and the governor called it up in a 30-day special session with less than 10 days left to go. So this is a fast-track bill. It's got a high profile. It is a publicity stunt. I mean, it may be that you really want the bill and that you really agree with the policy, but the way you're doing it calls up headlines, you know, and to the benefit of the people calling it up. So, you know, there's a little bit on both sides here. If they really, really wanted to pass this thing on both sides and had agreed on what it was they wanted to pass, we'd have this bill now. But they never really got it settled well enough in time. And part of the fault for that has to be on the people who wanted to fast track it. If you really want to pass this thing, call it at the beginning of the session and give them time to do it.
Lieutenant Governor and Senator Patrick didn't help with their comments pitting the state house against the federal government, specifically calling out the president, which was a lot of people in the meeting yesterday had problems with, including several Republicans. Wayne Christian was one of them, saying you know, let's not make this the Senate's last word, you know, because they chose to make this an issue against President Obama. It's like, you know, they left early, we have this, but let's still try to pass it out anyway, which it was a very interesting meeting because there are a lot of people. Actually, Eddie Rodriguez from...
You should say what the meeting was.
The criminal jurisprudence meeting that kicked it out very late yesterday.
This is the committee that considered the bill.
They considered the bill yesterday. They had some co-authors that actually withdrew their names after this rhetoric kind of started heating up, making it Texas versus the federal government. So that had, I think, a lot to do with the lack of, what did they need, 120 votes?
Yeah, they needed a supermajority. Yeah. One of the things that they did with this late play for this bill was put a House with a Republican supermajority in the hands of the Democrats. Mm-hmm. You can't get 120 votes if you only have 101 Republicans without getting the Democrats. And the Democrats were like, not so much.
Yeah.
But the blame is sort of the big lingering issue after this whole thing. That, I mean, it sort of caused a fight on the floor on the last day of the House. David Simpson, who did he blame? Did he blame the Speaker? Did he blame the Governor? Is there anyone he didn't blame?
He blamed the Speaker. He blamed the House leadership for adjourning yesterday and forcing the 4/5 vote. Then he was corrected by Representative Hochberg and I think Representative Kolkhorst saying, you know, they needed to do that yesterday anyway.
Right.
And then it was Representative Keffer that said, you know, I think the author of the bill should learn the rules before he starts popping off, you know, at the House leadership, right, which made things a little bit testy.
Yeah. And starts making acquisitions, I think he said, instead of making accusations. Yeah. Right?
Who do you guys think deserves the blame?
They slowballed the bill. They, you know, if you pass the bill Friday, then you get it out. There's two dead cats here at the end of the session. One dead cat is the TSA bill. The other one's sanctuary cities.
Right.
Both of these arguably got killed in the House. The TSA bill, because they didn't pass it out Friday and they jammed up the Senate, and the Senate, you know, at the end basically said, you know, this is your problem, you guys solve it. The sanctuary cities bill, because the Senate sent it over there 10 days before the end of the session. Now, the governor and the House were trying to blame Robert Duncan, and he's probably got some blame here for not letting them attach it late to a fiscal bill.
Well, now the Senate has put out a statement, the Senate Republican caucus has put out a statement saying basically don't blame Duncan. You know, we directed him not to attach it because we thought both SB1, the fiscal matters, and sanctuary cities were at risk of not passing.
Well, and he wasn't the only conferee that was against adding it on there.
So, but the House sat on sanctuary cities. I mean, they had the bill for, you know, well over a week, and they could have passed it as it was. They could have amended it and sent it back, and they dithered. Both the dead cats land in the House, I think.
And they had two versions of the bill. They heard them both that one night in committee. They left them both pending, right. SB9 and HB9.
But what about the Senate move to adjourn? Like, if they really wanted to, the Senate could have waited around another day and, you know, waited for another bill to come back from the House and done a quick conference committee and settled these things, couldn't they?
Yeah, they had a caucus on, help me out here, Monday afternoon, the Senate did.
I think it was Monday afternoon.
It was either Monday or Tuesday.
Definitely one of the afternoons.
And one of the conversations that they had in that caucus was they thought that the House was trying to kill the bill, but kill it on the Senate side. And that the reason they had sent it over so late and within filibuster range on the Senate side was so the TSA bill would die over in the Senate instead of in the House. The way they adjourned gave the House, you know, I mean, they gave the House time if the House wanted to suspend its rules to pass the bill, but they didn't want to take blame for not passing it themselves.
Right. I mean, the Senate was playing big-time defense. You know, they basically cleared their desk. They said, you know, we've given you a sanctuary cities bill. We've given you a TSA bill. It's up to you all to do the rest here.
Right. And there's a little bit of sibling rivalry here.
You know, revenge, right?
Well, 2 years ago, the House adjourned early on the Senate and left them hanging on some stuff, and in fact caused a couple of days, a quick special session to clean up the mess. And I asked one of the senators after the caucus, I said, well, was anybody talking about the House leaving early 2 years ago? And the answer was, oh, that came up a couple of times in the conversation. I think there was some animosity there.
Well, going back to sanctuary cities, the House did pass its version during the regular session. So that's what a lot of back and forth was. Hey, we did our job, you know, during the regular, and now you guys, you know, trying to pin it all on us this late in the game. So it was just a lot of finger pointing back and forth on that one bill. But both chambers, I guess, can be one and one, you know, the House during the regular session, the Senate.
So the Sanct Cities bill that came over from the Senate wasn't just sanctuary cities, right?
No. In the special session?
Secure communities. Right.
It had the, it was a three-part bill. It had the secure communities, and it had the driver's license provisions, which actually Chairman Cook, the chairman of the House State Affairs Committee, had concerns about both those. As did Bert Solomons, the author of HB9 and the author of HB12 during the regular session. He told us after the State Affairs Committee canceled its meeting to push out the bills on Monday that he thought that smaller local jails, city governments thought the secure communities was an unfunded mandate. And city jails are not they're not really geared to hold people more than 24, 48 hours. A lot of them don't even have kitchen facilities and are a lot smaller. So you run these people through secure communities at the city level, you have to wait for ICE to pick them up, and ICE, you know, might take 72 hours, you know, might take 4 days. So they had a lot of concerns about the costs, and Chairman Cook had a lot of concerns about the driver's license provisions in SB 9, which is what he said, which is why he said he didn't really like that bill.
So that stuff got stuck in that committee with all that on it.
Yeah.
Here's a question, though. I mean, you know, the Senate said to the House, here's the TSA bill, you know, take it if you want it. But they had to know that it was going to be impossible for the House to get 4/5, right?
They thought it was impossible for the House to get 4/5, but they also thought that the House sent it to them so late, the House version to them so late, that it was impossible for them to get it out, because the earliest they could have brought it up was late Tuesday, and they thought that was within range of a filibuster. And they didn't want it to die on their side. So they're looking at it and saying, if this bill's going to die, where's it going to die? We're not going to let them do it to us.
Here's maybe you agree or disagree with the statement. I'm curious. But I think the leadership, Dewhurst, Perry, Strauss, I don't think any of them really wanted either sanctuary cities or TSA. I think the finger pointing is about political cover. I think they jammed each other up in order to ensure that neither of those bills really got there. I think they have to do the finger pointing now, that Perry had to add it to the call because he needed those voters. But I don't think any of them really want either of these bills.
Well, the best evidence of that is that the governor's office told me yesterday, and probably you guys too, that after they passed the Texas windstorm insurance bill and they passed the fiscal matters bill, there was no need for another special session. Mm-hmm. So there's one. And then there was no clamor from either the House or the Senate side after they signed died for, please come back and do X, Y, Z. Nobody's calling for it.
Well, and Perry hasn't even been here working the floor or anything. I mean, he's been all around the country.
Right. He's in California at this point, right?
Yeah.
And he's released a statement today, basically. I mean, he's done sort of the blame game, too, but you know, basically released a statement today saying this was a successful session and, you know, we're not, no indication that he would call them back for either of these things.
Well, and especially, I mean, sanctuary cities has been one of the emergency items from the get-go, right?
Yeah.
But especially with the TSA bill, I mean, that was sort of a last-second addition to a special session call sort of following Alex Jones, who has a big talk radio megaphone,
the
sort
YouTube
of jumping
stuff.
All over this issue.
He doesn't need a megaphone. That guy's loud.
Yeah. Right.
Well, yeah, you know, he has now twice visited the Capitol, and both times it's been almost impossible to hear what's going on in the chambers.
Mm-hmm.
And it was pretty wild.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, what about the issue of the quorum issues that have sort of plagued the House for this entire special session?
Well, you know, the problem with a special session is that you don't have, like you do in a regular session, everybody has all of their own bills. You have the bills that make headlines, but you also have, everybody has the bill for the low water crossing back home or for the community center or for this thing or that thing or whatever it is. So everybody's fully employed. In a special session, there's only 5 or 6 or, you know, 8 issues, and there's probably only 20 people really involved in everything, and everybody else is kind of idle, and golf courses look good, and 10,000 reasons not to show up. It's hard to get everybody to show up for work.
And these are citizen legislators who have sort of made plans, not planning on being at work. That was the Larry Taylor problem.
Well, yeah, but on the other hand, I mean, you know, you signed up for the gig, you get a really nice pension, you get health care benefits, which is a pretty nice deal for your citizen legislator job. Show up.
I think what's interesting about sort of the effect of social media on this session is that you've seen all these people calling out different lawmakers when they're not on the floor in key votes. I mean, there was an issue this week where one of the anti-abortion groups waiting for a vote on SB 7, which was the health reform bill that had some abortion amendments. I mean, they were taking pictures from the gallery of the House floor, you know, putting it up on Facebook and saying, look, this is the seat where your lawmaker sits. If they're not in that seat, that means they weren't here for this abortion vote, and we're going to hold them accountable
right,
to it.
Here's the seating chart. Here's the photo. It was
right.
Pretty interesting.
Right. I mean, that is a sort of unique way of telling people who was and who, you know, wasn't there for it.
Well, and that gets into the issue also, just looking back at the whole 170-day session that we just endured.
That's an endurance
is a pretty good word.
If we go back to your mindset in January, weren't we thinking this legislature is so one-party controlled, everything that they want to fly through is going to just sail through, there won't be many problems? Are you surprised it has taken 170 days to not pass some bills that some people were very passionate about?
No, because one of the things we were arguing about was which Republican Party is going to show up. You know, it was that we came out of the election and we had this Tea Party vote, we had a big fiscal conservative vote, we had a big social conservative vote, we had sort of the establishment Republicans. It wasn't clear who was going to have the upper hand or how fragmented they were going to be. There was that little speaker's race thing up there at the beginning. You remember that? Mm-hmm.
What's the likelihood of another one of those?
I think it's 100%. I think it's probably already underway. I mean, you know, a bunch of the Democrats said before the end of the session they weren't going to sign pledge cards for Strauss or for anybody else here at the end of the session, and that leaves it an open field. You know, everybody gets to go home and, you know, emphasize or de-emphasize the things that they saw in this session or the things that they won or lost. And then, you know, I think it's going to be a really interesting March primary for the Republicans. But we came into this thinking, you know, you're going to have a set of kind of insurgent Republicans, a set of kind of establishment Republicans, and then these Democrats, and it's going to be how the blocks move around. And I think that's kind of how the session went.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if you were a Democrat, you basically showed up for the special session and sat there twiddling your thumbs and watched as the Republicans decided which side they were on.
Yeah,
until you could vote no on the TSA bill,
right?
Make sure they don't get to 120. That's what they were waiting for.
They were still pretty successful, though, the Republicans, as far as everything they did get out. I mean, 2 years ago, voter ID was a huge deal. It almost derailed the session. And this year, after the election, people joke like, hey, it's on local and consent.
It's pretty tough for a conservative to say this was a bad session for conservatives. They, you know, I mean, they didn't get necessarily everything they wanted, but they haven't had a better session.
Which of the Republican parties that you listed earlier had the upper hand, and which one came out better?
Well, I think, you know, I mean, you know, everything that happened probably satisfies the fiscal conservatives. It was a pretty tight session, and you know, they cut the budget, they held the line on a bunch of programs, they did a weird sleight of hand on the rainy day fund that we've talked about. You know, they kind of pre-spent it, but they, you know, at least directly stayed out of the rainy day fund. There weren't any tax increases. I think for those guys, you know, check, check, check. Social conservatives had kind of a mixed bag.
Right. They got a couple wins, but I mean, I would say largely they were successful with abortion. They were successful with family planning, with voter ID.
Voter ID, yeah.
But I mean, I think they fell short on a lot of other things they wanted.
A lot of immigration, for sure.
Tons of immigration bills.
Right. They had, you know, we had, you know, 30 immigration bills filed the first day or something.
Yeah. I mean, how many stories did you write about? I mean, there were 60 plus. You know, when you counted them all, some were on the extreme end that people knew wouldn't even get a hearing. A lot of them didn't. But some thought actually had a shot, especially after they watered down the sanctuary, or they said they watered down the version. A lot of people still had a lot of concerns about it. But I think that's one thing that, you know, the Democrats can, you know, look in the mirror and say, hey, you know, at least we won this one. You know, if it's a consolation prize to them, I guess it's a really, really nice one.
What was it? Why didn't those bills get through?
It depends on who you ask. You know, maybe a lot of people, like the Chairman Cook said, they try to combine too many issues on one bill.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't, you know, that whereas they would have supported one, you know, once you started kind of packing it in, it diluted the support. A lot of people say that there were some folks with some deep pockets that started making phone calls last week and, you know, getting people to maybe change their mind. And I believe Chairman Cook when he said that he was really torn after he heard a lot of these students say, look, I came here when I was 3 years old. I just graduated from UT Austin with an honors degree in pharmacy. What do you expect me to do? What am I going to do now? You're going to send me back to Mexico?
I don't even speak fluent Spanish.
I don't even speak the language. You're going to send me, especially now, you're going to send me back to a country that's, you know, such upheaval. And, you know, he had issues with the driver's license things. And he said that on the House floor yesterday when he was urging a no vote on SB1. So I think that's ultimately what happened. And, you know, what did Aaron Pena say yesterday? I think he tweeted something out that, you know, just because there's an R by their name doesn't mean they're necessarily for, you know, this policy that's, you know, up on the Republican agenda. So,
and then Perry went 5 for 6 on his
emergency items,
yeah. Right? So, you know, consider it a win for him. Sank Cities was the one that didn't get through.
5 for 6 doesn't CSA fall into that?
That wasn't an emergency.
Oh, it's not
item.
Wasn't
an
emergency.
Yeah, okay. The
got
six
it.
Things
five
he
for
named.
Six mm-hmm. minus right. Sank Cities.
5 for 6.5, we'll say.
Right.
Right. So you know, he comes out, you know, pretty well situated. Dewhurst came out pretty well situated. Strauss came out as unstable as he went in politically. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, the House is wobbly, and you know, it's not clear how that's going to come out.
You don't think Dewhurst's appearance on the Texas Monthly 10 worst list hurts him at all?
I don't know that it does. I mean, you know, if you're a Republican and you're running in a Republican primary, and you say the media is against me, that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Well, that's one of the pillars of Perry's campaign, isn't it?
The media is against us, right? I mean,
How many average Texas Republican voters are reading Texas Monthly's best and worst list?
And more importantly, taking their direction from it.
Right.
Well, direction, I don't know. I'm sure they're all reading it. Do you think that the best and worst lists would be
really
at least the Twitter feed? Do you think that the best and worst list would be different?
Likely Republican voters
at the
reading
end
a Twitter
of
feed?
The. You don't think Republicans are on Twitter?
I think
there's
on
a whole
Twitter.
Hashtag for it.
I think, but I'm talking about average voters. You know, the real people who turn out at their precincts.
Right.
You think
well,
they care what Texas Monthly says?
I think Twitter people that tweet about politics are probably more likely to vote than people that don't.
Yeah, but not everybody who is likely to vote is a Twitter maniac.
No, obviously, like 2% of the country is on Twitter. Let's move on.
Okay, Reeve has a Twitter problem. Okay, yeah. Next.
No, I was just going to see if you thought that the Texas Monthly best and worst would be any different if it was written at the end of the special session.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's always more information, right? You know, who failed, who didn't, hadn't failed in the first part. You know, who had a great time, who had a, you know. Yeah, I mean, to the extent that people were players in the special session who weren't players or who played differently than they did in the regular session, sure.
I think David Simpson should be the calf of the Brazos.
So the if you're calf. So if you're a freshman lawmaker in the House, I mean, do you have any interest in doing this over again?
Sure. Yeah, I think they saw some wins. I think, you know, if you're a freshman, let's say you're a freshman and you're one of the insurgent Republicans, mm-hmm. and you watched this last week and you saw what happened to the TSA bill and you saw what happened to the Sanctuary Cities bill, you can look at it and say, well, we fell short on both of them. You can look at it and say, well, you know, we came really close. And if there were more of us and if we were a little bit more organized and if we knew at the beginning of a session what we now know at the end of our freshman session, we could do some more. Sure, I think those guys will come back.
I think anybody
who in their first session looked at this and went, you know, I just don't like this process. I don't like this whole thing. And I think there's a couple of those, but I don't think that's the majority.
How many do you think are burnt out? Obviously not freshmen, but how many? You know, we were talking about this before we started. It's like how many lawmakers are thinking right now, so close after signing, that I thinking, do I really want to do this again?
I bet Fred Brown from Brown.
Yeah.
There's a big bet.
Well, we know Chairman Chisholm, we know right. Brown, we know Joaquin Casados, obviously, you know.
One of the biggest classes in the legislature was the 2003 class that Craddock elected in the 2002 elections, new redistricting maps. Mm. Those guys all vested this time. So if you're 50 years old and you have 12 years in the legislature, you can begin collecting a pension. If you're 60 years old and you have 8 years in the legislature, you can begin collecting a pension. Those guys all look at it and say, well, I'm vested, I'm out. And I think there's some of that. It was a long session. It was a kind of session where even if you were a conservative and you like some of this stuff, this wasn't a concession where they were doing a lot of things that were sort of new and positive and bright and shiny. They were, you know, they were turning the screws down on the budget. They were doing a lot of things conservatives think is important, but they weren't doing a lot of things that are fun.
Yeah, it was a slog, total
right.
slog.
And I think a lot of people, you know, if they've sort of checked the box on the pension, if that's what they were doing, or if they have another office in mind, it's a redistricting year, so a lot of them are going to look at, well, I could be a member of Congress, or I could be a member of the Texas Senate.
What about Ogden, who had to be talked into coming back in the first place, and really had to just sit with the budget?
Well, I guess there's people already talking about his race again, so, you know, there's a question of whether Ogden's going to run. You know, I will say that at the end of a session, there is always this, like, 60-day period when you really shouldn't ask anybody if they're going to run again, because their first answer is, heck no, get me out of here.
Right.
Unless you're Aaron Pena, who's having a fundraiser with Austin Clark.
Ask him in September. I mean, there's a couple of them. You know, Kelly Hancock is talking about running for the state Senate for the Wendy Davis seat. Jason Isaac's name has come up in conversation about the Lloyd Doggett seat in Congress, the one that Doggett is moving out of.
Right. 25.
Right.
Is Wendy Davis talking about running for the Wendy Davis seat?
Wendy Davis has talked about moving into an adjacent district. And, you know, don't be surprised if she and Chris Harris end up in the same race. So
she's also said she wouldn't throw out of bed the idea of running for governor. So
right. I mean, there are a lot of people knocking around and looking at races. They're going to be looking over the results. You know, Michael Quinn Sullivan's group came out with their list of A's and B's and C's and D's and F's. And I think a lot of members are going to look at those and say, well, in a Republican primary, maybe so-and-so is vulnerable or so-and-so is not. You know, they're all going to go home and kind of heal up a little bit and choose their next race.
So, Ross, in 2013, if I say Texas House, the number 60 for House Democrats, are you going over or under?
Under. I think 93 Republicans on these maps.
That was exact.
Well, that's why he's the redistricting guru.
He hasn't thought about it for a second.
How many freshmen next time around?
You know, I don't know that. That's kind of interesting. You know, usually the big turnover years are redistricting years, but we had a bunch of freshmen come in this time. You know, we had that election just a minute ago. It seems like 22 new people came in. Mm-hmm. So we had a big freshman class, so a lot of those seats washed out. I think we're going to see 8 or 9 freshmen get beat because the maps that they drew don't protect all 101 Republicans. So I think, you know.
Well, and even some freshmen could try to move up, right? Like Schwartner could try to move up. He's one right. person that could move to Ogden's.
I, you know, don't be surprised if they turn over 25 or 30 seats in the House. In the Senate, I think 2 or 3. I mean, it's still that kind of a map.
Right.
3 would be high.
It depends on who quits. If Ogden quits, that's a turnover. The Davis seat is in contest. If Davis and Harris are facing each other, that's potential. You know, they'll show up.
Mm-hmm. And if you are one of the freshmen that might not have enjoyed this session, next session is projected to be just as painful, isn't it?
Yeah, the budget starts, you know, here we are, structural
tomorrow.
Deficit again. Yeah, structural deficit again. Education, you know, enrollments are still growing. Caseload and utilization rate growth is still really high in the Medicaid program and other federal health programs. It's, you know, chapter what, 17?
That's what I mean. Story. I mean, if I were considering running again or running for the first time, I would look at this and say, ugh, I'll wait another 2 years.
Right.
I'm sure the immigration issue will just go away, though. That was a joke.
That should be solved by then.
Yeah. That's solved.
Yeah. Check.
Yeah. No, you assume, which is probably not a good thing to do in the first place, but that the freshmen are not getting in thinking this is just going to be a joy.
No, of course not. I mean, I don't think anybody looks at the legislature and thinks it's going to be a joy, but I think you look at the legislature and think, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, this is an opportunity for me to do exciting and interesting and meaningful things. And I'm not sure how many people envision slogging through the budget as the thing that gives them that kind of, you know, reward.
Right. If and when the economy improves, the next probably big line on the legislature will be, you got to revise this fiscal situation so you don't have these structural deficits, whatever they do to fix them, you know, whether it's cutting or, you know, whatever it is that they do. Once they get in a better, more stable economy, I think that's going to be the big task. And, you know, some of them want to dig into that.
How do you think that the legislature will be different under President Perry?
Under Governor who?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, you get that funny scenario that we've talked about where if Perry were elected to federal office and if David Dewhurst were elected to the U.S. Senate, the Texas Senate would pick a lieutenant governor, and that lieutenant governor would become governor. And then they would pick another lieutenant governor, and that one would become lieutenant governor. So which senator do you think is going to be the governor? And tell me how that session's going to go. Back at you, Reed.
Yeah.
I was going to say, that's complicated.
Let's have Deborah Medina answer this one.
Hi, this is Deborah Medina again. Any questions or comments about the TribCast can be emailed to podcast@texastribune.org.
All right. And on behalf of Ross, Emily, Julian, our producer Todd, this is Reeve. Thanks for listening.
I miss Ross singing Sunny Die. It would have been good.
Sunny.
Sunny Die.
You could probably record it again.